face on somebody's new mode law. I've been having a sweet dream. I've been dreaming since I woke up today. It's starring me in my sweet dream.
Don't think this show is about stuff that isn't real. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings, on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. The sustainability movement has been gaining steam for many years. Some might trace its popular origins to Small is Beautiful, others even further back, but the term is so widely used that it could mean really just about anything. In some respects, because it's become so ubiquitous, those of us with an activist view of the subject can push the envelope. Some call it going local. I prefer the term a homegrown economy. My guests tonight to talk about this subject are Holly Ettinger, who is the Director of Sustainable Development at the Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation. Holly, welcome.
Thank you.
And Jeff Reese, who is the Assistant Director of the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
I don't want to start the show by putting my friends on the spot, but I'm guessing the two of you probably have different definitions of sustainability, because I don't know if we have a definition, really, of sustainability. But, Jeff, you have a definition?
Well, that was one thing that, as I prepared for this session, it occurred to me that in the couple of years that Holly and I have been working on this issue, I've never actually put down on paper what such a definition might be. And I struggled a little bit to do it. As you've mentioned, it means so many things that it sometimes means nothing at all,
yeah,
as we talk about it. But it's very complex, obviously, but I don't like to deal with things that way. I try and keep them simpler if I could. So I wrote a really simple definition. Creation or preservation of positive attributes of life without compromising those of others, including future generations.
That's pretty wide.
It is pretty wide.
What's yours?
Mine is kind of looking at the three pillars that we talk about in sustainability, and that's economy, environment, and community, and balancing those three for community and the community's future growth. So not putting any one of those three pillars in a bad position.
Is there an academic definition out there? I mean, have you ever, you know, is there any kind of consensus developing whatsoever on this from, you know, the pointy-headed folks who think this thing's through?
Well, those three points I actually stole from a Muhlenberg College professor. And thanks to Kim Hyman, if she's listening, who taught me that. I don't know where she picked it up. But, you know, one of the definitions is also kind of the meeting today's needs without sacrificing the ability of future generations to meet their needs.
Ooh, I like that, too.
That's kind of based on the Indian proverb, I guess.
But what's a need for today? I mean, how would you define that? That's one of the things that I thought about as part of this preparation. What's a need versus something you just want or think you need? You know, it's many things for many people, and it's very different. Do you need open space? Probably we do.
I think you could make the argument that it's a mental health issue and a physical health issue beyond just, you know, liking something. Do you know what I mean?
Right. In a way, it's a lot easier to talk about sustainability by thinking about what you think isn't sustainable, like poor health.
Yeah.
You don't want that to be sustainable. And so that's not really part of the definition. So good health is. And so open space and its impacts on good health is something that you would expect to be sustainable and fit in the definition.
But what about people that live in an urban environment that don't live in open space, right? Or don't live even in proximity to? I mean, a pocket park, does that count?
I think it does.
Yeah.
And when I mentioned in my definition a positive attribute of life, that's very different things to very different people, which is what the challenge is of this whole thing. What is a positive aspect? Do I want to work or walk through an urban landscape, a cityscape? Is that really what makes me feel good about me and my environment? Or do I need the woods to feel that way?
Know,
or do I need both?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get into all this stuff. Let me run you mine. Mine is, you know, typical, you know, kind of poetic kind of stuff. Here's my definition. A sustainable community is one in which we all want less, not more, where we all see ourselves as stewards of limited resources, which I think is consistent with what you were just saying, where we all see each other as neighbors with the kind of obligation to each other that the concept of neighbor would suggest, where we maximize our investment in our community, and our community is as independent of outside investment as is possible. You know, I don't think a sustainable community is a community that has, you know, a quarter of its gross domestic product coming from a single industry like Bethlehem did for decades. You know, so I think you got to get into diversification of the jobs. I think density is a huge issue, because while few of us would argue, I think that having a high density community is necessarily ideal. I think everybody thinks that, you know, being able to catch salamanders in the woods is a good thing. Everybody can't live out in a 2-acre, farmhouse.
I really like what you included in there with the use of the term neighbor, which simply represents that in terms of moving forward, becoming more sustainable, it has to be me, but also it has to be about you. It can't just be about me or just about you. That it has to be with consideration of those who are your true neighbors, in the spirit of that term.
Yeah. Holly, you want to pile on? We can move. Here's one of my issues. You know, I have what I call the Jennings hierarchy of responsible consumer spending. And,
sounds complicated.
At the top of the pyramid, and this is the kind of thing that if everybody did this, we'd have a more sustainable community, in my opinion. That at the top of the agenda is urban, locally owned, in my case, even minority owned businesses. And that as you go down, you get further away from urban, you get further away from indigenous, you get further away from local. And at the very bottom of the Jennings hierarchy of responsible consumer spending is places that call themselves the neighborhood grill that aren't located anywhere near a neighborhood. You know, they plunk them down in the middle of a Target parking lot. And then they have the nerve to call themselves the neighborhood grill. I think the decisions that we make, if we want to preserve open space, then don't buy a house on a 2-acre lot in Heidelberg Township.
But there might be open space next to it.
Well, those 2 acres around your house are open.
Except they're usually filled up with chem lawn products to make sure your grass can be combed, as opposed to, yeah. Jeff, the Lehigh Valley Plan, first of all, I just want to tell you that I think I've been a fan of Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. I think you do really, really good work.
Thank you.
And the frustration for me is that if this community had listened to the Planning Commission for the last 40 years, not only would Mike Kaiser not be able to say, "I told you so," but and for those of you listening who don't know Mike Kaiser, Mike is the long-serving executive director of the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. The Planning Commission has gotten it right over and over and over, and the problem really is that the Planning Commission has no ability to force its suggestions. It's got no power, really, when it comes right down to it, because of very fundamental flaws in the municipal planning code.
Well, you mentioned one of the primary drivers of where we've gone with this whole sustainability effort locally. It really begins, and hopefully then will continue, through the comprehensive plan that we've had for 50 years, so that the commission maintains a comprehensive plan for Lehigh and Northampton counties, have since the 60s when the commission was formed. And it's pretty specific in what it identifies in terms of things we think are appropriate to do. You want a compact urban core that involves Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton, and basically the area that stretches along the corridor of Route 22, connecting them with urban-type, denser uses. Outside of that, you want to preserve things. You want to preserve natural features. We have incredible natural features associated with the Blue Mountain and South Mountain and our stream valleys and so on and on and on and on. And we want to preserve them to the maximum extent that we can. And then we're a history of a farming community. And farming is a very important part of our heritage. It's something that we'd like to see continue. But to do that, you have to save the land to farm on. And that's a very, very difficult thing to continue to do, especially as we've had these development boom times where the offers on the table are very attractive, and it's hard to maintain a farming environment in that kind of economic pressure.
No, a great way to, you know, make a case to preserve farmland is to use farmland to grow food locally for the local population. And so I think as we move to your model, Alan, about, you know, kind of favoring local, not just businesses, but local products, we create an even stronger case for maintaining our farmland and creating a more sustainable community. I mean, is it sustainable that we're always going to get all of our food from outside the region, you know?
And there, and the things that both of you said lead to the issue of the question, or the answer to the question of density. You know, if you don't have densely populated communities, the alternative is sprawling suburban communities. And while that works for some, at some point it becomes choking and unsustainable.
You know, I have a good friend who is a member of the NRA, and he is an enthusiast, and was giving me an earful about why we need automatic weapons. And it was kind of the doomsday scenario, right? Like, if the government breaks down and you're going to want a good weapon. Okay. Well, I'm also going to want a farm, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm also going to want someone raising cows.
Well, you can
and
shoot the
growing.
Varmints that are eating your crops.
I mean, it's just funny that some people are, you know, looking at doomsday scenarios, but they're not talking about where's your food coming from, where's your transportation.
Or the fact that the species is threatened by global warming. So Jeff, to be a planner, you've got to have some thoughts about what's coming down the line. And I know that the Planning Commission has done some recent forecasting on population and on employment. And if you could give us some of the things that you think are particularly useful pieces of information from that, that'd be great.
Sure. And this is something that's absolutely necessary from the planning perspective. You have to have projections of what you think is likely to happen over the next several decades. And that's the type of planning horizon that we're talking about. It's not just a 5 to 10 year projection, but we have to look out 30 years and see what we think could happen or should happen over a 30 year period. A couple of the main types of things that we need to project are changes in population and change in employment. And we do that periodically, about every 5 years. We'll take data from the census and we'll refresh that information and see where we think we're going. In this case, we've just finished in the last year or so projections of population and employment for the period of 2010 through 2040. And the bottom line message here is that we figure the Lehigh Valley population is going to increase by 226,000 people over a 30-year period. That's a 35% increase over the current population.
Jeff, do you know what our population increase was in the past 30 years?
Sure. It was about a 30% increase over the 30 years prior to that. So this represents a slightly higher percentage increase, but it's even larger in terms of the absolute number. Over the 30 years prior, there were just short of 150,000 new people in the Lehigh Valley from 1980 through 2010. And this number is 226,000. So again,
it's
a percentage
basis,
because again, it's on the basis of whatever the existing population is. So it's a very significant number. And there's a lot of details involved with that we're certainly not going to go through. But the basics of projecting that population boil down to three things. The first thing is births. The second thing is deaths. And the third thing is migration. How many people are going to move either in or out of the valley over that time span? And basically the way it works in these two counties, Lehigh and Northampton, is that in Northampton County, without migration, there would be very little change in population over time. That births and deaths are relatively the same, and so there'd be very little change without people moving in or out of the valley. In Lehigh County, it's a little bit different. There's a little bit higher birth rate in Lehigh County, and so there would be a somewhat positive impact in terms of growth of population, even without migration. But the real story in terms of population change boils down to migration in this valley.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guests tonight are Holly Ettinger from the Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation, Jeff Reese from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. We're going to get into employment projections and much more. Stay with us.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem Southside in their 32nd season, presenting Ulysses Dreams, an exploration of origin and destiny, performed by the Touchstone Ensemble. This modern adaptation of the adventures of the hero Ulysses is performed in the form of a song cycle dealing with the characters of Ulysses and his relationship with various women in his life. April 13th to the 21st. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
Got to mourn the loss of the Talking Heads. That's great stuff. Before the break, we were talking about population forecasts by the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Jeff Reese from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, Holly Ettinger from Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation are here to talk about sustainable communities, what it means, where we're going, how we get there, what we'd sure like to do to make it work better. And Jeff, let's continue to talk about population.
Sure. I mentioned that in terms of growth in the Lehigh Valley of population, that the story really becomes about migration into and out of the valley and what that's going to look like, what the trends for that might be. In Lehigh County, it's been a pretty consistent pattern over time. As this data goes back to the 50s and we've tracked that, there's been a pretty steady in-migration of people to Lehigh County, and that's pretty much supported a relatively strong increase in population over time, over the decades. Northampton County has been a really different story. If you go back to the 70s or 80s, there was actually movement of people out of Northampton County in terms of migration. That has turned around in a big way, and we've heard why that happens. We are in Northampton County even closer than Lehigh County in terms of migration of people from New York City and northern New Jersey. And those trends we expect to certainly continue into the future. In terms of the overall numbers, the population increase we've talked about here over the next 30 years for the Valley is 226,000. 190,000 of that is all due to migration. So it's almost exclusively about migration when you're talking about the change in population.
And that's because New Jersey's affordable housing program is called Pennsylvania.
Well, it has been that.
It's pretty much what it comes down to.
And as we look at these projections, because it has been that, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to continue. And that's what we have to look at in terms of the next 30 years. Are those driving forces still in place to think that those kinds of trends that we've seen could reasonably continue? The trend you've mentioned, that driving force is still there. Certainly, we could have the situation where Pennsylvania is the place for people who wish to continue working in Manhattan or northern New Jersey could find places to live in the Lehigh Valley.
Right.
One of the other things about this, in terms of the migration and the change in population, over the next 30 years, there's going to be a dramatic change in the age of our population. We're going to have an aging of our local population, not dissimilar from what's happening throughout the nation, but in terms of the older of our population, we think in terms of five-year age groups. The oldest one that we track is the 75 and older age group, and that age group is going to more than double over the next 30 years. So you've got 50,000 or so people in that demographic in 2010, and that's going to change to 104,000.
The baby boomers? Is that the baby boomers?
Certainly is part of that.
Is that you guys?
Yeah, thanks, Holly.
Yes, thank you very much.
Let's just ignore her. Go on, Jeff.
And so you have a shift, not only a change in the total population, but you have a shift in the age of that population. And so there's going to be a lot of older people within the Lehigh Valley and the United States generally at the end of that 30-year period, and they're going to need all kinds of things. They're going to need health services, for example. So that's kind of a segue a little bit into the fact that we have population and employment projections that we prepare. And so it's kind of interesting then to see where the increases in employment might be in the Valley as well. But again, the baseline point here is twofold. There's going to be a dramatic increase in the population over the next 30 years, and there's going to be an aging of the population in the Lehigh Valley, and that aging population is going to need things.
But isn't a significant amount of the in-migration Latino, and isn't the Latino migration considerably younger than the Lehigh Valley population overall? Or do we know those numbers, or is that not
We do know those numbers to a degree. The Latino population in the Valley, in terms of the census data from 2000 to 2010, showed nearly a doubling of people in the Latino community from 2000 to 2010 in the Lehigh Valley, more so in Lehigh County than Northampton County. And that is a demographic that may be very different from what we just talked about in terms of the migration for different kinds of economic reasons, from New York City, Manhattan, and so forth, into the home sites in the suburbs yeah. of the Valley. One of the striking things in terms of the population change is that we've been doing this for quite a while. And as you look at the cities, Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton, their populations have been pretty static over a period of decades. Very little change, decade to decade. And so as we did these forecasts 5 years ago, we would have forecast the same thing for the cities. Very little change. But Allentown gained 11,000 people in the last decade, something that you wouldn't necessarily have anticipated. And it throws a lot of this stuff, throws a curve into a lot of this stuff that you have to try and figure out why and then what it means moving forward.
One of those curves is that Allentown's poverty rate is now in excess of 30%, whereas the poverty rate in the rest of the county is barely 5%. That kind of disparity can be really damaging to a community's ability to sustain itself. And when that community can't sustain itself, its surrounding communities have absolutely no choice but to be affected too.
Sure, absolutely.
Do you then think through the basics of the market effects of this kind of thing? I guess that's what our responsibility is, really, as in the work that we do, is. And I've always said that economics is little more than psychology with a dollar sign in front of it. That essentially, you take some effect or some stimulus, and then you reason through the effect that how people's behavior changes as a result of that. So, for example, if there is a predatory lending problem that collapses the economy, people lose their homes. They lose their homes. They end up having to rent. That drives up rental costs. Does the planning committee then reason through? The planning commission then reason through if this, then that. Or is that the kind of thing that we need to be doing once we get into Holly's part about the sustainable communities?
Well, I think we're certainly going to be talking about it more then. But what it basically boils down to in terms of the projection methodologies that we have is that we do have an understanding of some of the things that are going on that are creating these kinds of longer-term impacts on population and employment. Again, the impact of New York and New Jersey on migration. And the questions that have to be asked each time are, do those factors stay the same looking forward? Are they different in some way looking forward? And we have to try and figure out how that might work. One of the things that's rather difficult in the time frame that we sit right now is that we have some changes in the demographics that are unprecedented. The changes that I mentioned in Allentown. You mentioned the poverty statistics associated with that.
Rare is the city with a population increase in Pennsylvania.
It doesn't happen very often, but looking forward, we're forecasting that to be more the norm. We've had that experience now with Allentown. And so indications are, best that we can tell, that that's something that you'd expect to continue, at least to some degree in the future, and not just impacting Allentown. We certainly show increases in the population of Allentown moving forward, but also in Bethlehem, and also in Easton, and also in many of the small boroughs that have also not seen population increases for decades, that we show as having significant increases in population over the next 30 years, which gets back to one of your earlier statements, the issue of density. What you're not having are brand new housing developments going up in the cities that people are moving into. You have an increase in density of existing people in existing housing.
Yeah.
And increasing the density of that population.
Let's take a quick couple of minutes to focus on some of the features of your employment forecasts.
Sure. Similar to the demographics, what we're looking at are long-term trends. We actually have rented a model to help us with this. It's called a REMI model, Regional Economic Models Incorporated. It bases it off the national economy and the relationship between the local economy to the national economy. And it is very much driven as well by population. And so we have a model that incorporates the actual population changes that we foresee, and then it uses that as one of the inputs to try and predict what the changes in employment are going to be over time. And in terms of employment, again, we had 226,000 new people coming into the Valley over 30 years. We have about 131,000 new jobs that are going to be coming into the Valley over that period of time. But I say coming in. That's the net impact of some gains in employment in some sectors of the economy and some losses in some other sectors. And the one that I mentioned previously is big gains. The largest gain is in the healthcare mm-hmm. sector. The largest losses in the manufacturing sector. Not very surprising.
Great.
You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio, FM 88.1. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. By day, most nights, and for that matter, freaking every weekend, I'm the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. Once a month, sometimes twice, sometimes three times, WDIY is nice enough to give me this mic so I can talk about public affairs issues. And tonight we're talking about sustainable communities. My guests are Holly Ettinger from Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation and Jeff Reese from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. And over there where the buttons are and the gadgets and the lights and all is Ray Schwab, who has been just flawless in his production of these shows. And Ray, I'm always thankful for your presence. Ray is a volunteer, and does a great job for us. So Holly, you pull off a pretty cool trick. You write a grant application for funding from the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development. I guess the Environmental Protection Agency was involved, and we get $3.4 million over a 3 or 5 year period of time. What the heck are you doing with all that money?
Well, actually, I want to kind of address your question and something that Jeff was just talking about. And one of the things we're doing with that is developing an economic development plan for the Valley. And so as we develop that strategy and look at what our current employment sectors are, my question to Jeff is, if the projection is a continued decrease in manufacturing, which we've seen a huge drop off in the past 30 years in manufacturing since... actually probably more like 40, 50 years. But so my question is, you know, the same question Ebenezer Scrooge wakes up on Christmas morning and asks, and that is, you know, is this definitely the future? Is it not too late to make changes? And so I think that the goal of the economic development plan will be to really talk about what are the goals of the community. Maybe it's to see manufacturing jobs not decrease. And what can we do in the short term and long term to increase that employment sector and to hedge our bets and change the projection?
Well, a couple things about that. First of all, the manufacturing sector, although losing employees, is a very highly productive sector in terms of output. So if you want to talk about the different sides of employment, in terms of economic output, manufacturing is still very important in the Valley and will be continuing so into the future, although it may be done with fewer and fewer employees. Mm-hmm. So that the loss of employees has a lot to do with technical innovation, where you get more done with fewer people. You use robots for all kinds of things today. Those kinds of technologies will help us in the manufacturing sector, even though the number of employees in that sector is probably going to decline because of those factors.
Mm-hmm. Productivity gains.
But there are a lot of indications that we're seeing that what has made some offshore places much better for manufacturing are kind of losing their edge. And so there apparently are going to be some improving opportunities for the United States and the Lehigh Valley being part of that to capture or recapture some of that manufacturing sector that's been lost over time. Probably not the same sectors that we lost. It may not be doing the same things that we've done historically. It probably is not going to be making steel as we've done. But again, there are a lot of manufacturing opportunities that are going to continue to be available, although they may not employ as many people. I would expect them to still be very highly productive and very important for the economy.
Mm-hmm. So let's go. What do you got? What are you doing with that $3.4 million?
So the economic development plan is one piece. Another piece that will be kind of rolling out in the next few weeks is a study on the fresh food in the Lehigh Valley and people's access to fresh food. We recognize through Department of Agriculture data that there are 4 food deserts in the valley. And a food desert is an area of low-moderate income where grocery stores are more than a mile away. Of course, it becomes a real challenge if you have to walk to a grocery store because you don't have a car. If it's more than a mile away, it's very difficult. So as we take a look at that that issue in detail and kind of local food sources. We'll be doing some public meetings over the summer and getting input on how to address some of the shortcomings and push up some of the strengths.
By the way, 20 years ago, we found that people who shop in urban stores, which were almost exclusively bodegas, paid 53% more, 56% more for their groceries and 83% more for non-grocery items that are bought in a grocery store. And they had 1/6 the fresh meat and vegetable and produce options. I'll be surprised if you don't find, at least similar records, similar findings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So food, economic development, and then housing. We're doing two different key studies on housing right now. One is an examination of the impediments to fair housing. So what are the challenges in Lehigh Valley for folks trying to live in neighborhoods of opportunity and quality neighborhoods? Is it all housing fairly available for all people? And then the other piece of the housing is the affordable housing study, which we've entrusted to our capable friends at the Planning Commission to delve into. And it's really an update to a 2007 study on affordable housing.
Right, we created that study back in 2007, and basically what it does is identify the wages of local workers and their opportunities to find employment and how that translates into their ability to get the appropriate housing that they need, whether that be purchasing a home or rental housing or what have you. What are the price factors associated with that, and where does the Valley stand in terms of the occupations that we have here and their ability to actually live here, to affordably live here in the Valley without spending too much of their income on either housing or housing and transportation combined, what have you, their ability to actually live here where they're able to find a job. There is another part of the housing study that we're working on too, and it's a little bit complicated to talk about, but again, trying to make things simple. It has to do with the balance between where housing is located and where the workers live, and where the employment centers are. I'm sorry.
So let me just interrupt for a second. What we have been kind of calling the jobs transit nexus, right?
I mean, that's
something that, I mean, so folks out there, you know, we're talking about the buzzword sustainability. The jobs transit nexus, I think, is another, you know, buzz phrase we're going to end up finding ourselves using a lot, because I mean, it's a huge issue.
It is an issue, and there's really there's two sides to the issue, at least, and one of them has to do with people that have choices and what they're choosing to do. People that may wish to live on the 2 acres in the suburb and find a job either in the city or perhaps in a different county entirely, and they can perhaps choose what their commute is. How long do they want to spend in a car? And that is obviously their choice to make. There are those, though, that have limited choices, the ones that need to rely on transit services to get to jobs, to get to daycare, to get to those places where they have to go. And how convenient or even possible is it for people from where they need to live, where it's affordable to live, to get to those places where they can find jobs for themselves, to support themselves and their family? And is that the transit nexus you're talking about? How complicated is that, and do we have an issue we have to try and solve there?
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I worry about, and you know me, I'm an anti-poverty guy, but if we talk about bus service as a low-income issue, we're going to lose, because people don't, you know, there's only so much money. But I think we want a transit system that everybody can use in a way that limits, mileage on cars.
Listen, we have an air quality problem in Lehigh Valley, and it's based on carbon particulate. And there's a whole bunch of new data out from Lehigh University that was part of this data, Lehigh Valley. We have an issue with air quality, and cars contribute to that. And so the more people we can get using transit, the better off and the more sustainable we are, if you will.
We're up to our next break. You're listening to listener-supported community public radio. This is WDIY. The show is called Lehigh Valley Discourse. We are not yelling at each other. This is not Glenn Beck from the left. This is Alan Jennings, your host, facilitating a conversation with Holly Ettinger from Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation, Jeff Reese from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, two people in the driver's seat, insofar as the direction of this community for the many years to come. So stay with us. We'll take a quick break.
They paid paradise and put up a fucking lie. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? They paid paradise and put up a fucking lie.
WDIY's pleased to partner with Lafayette College and the Williams Center for the Arts, presenting the Dave Liebman Quartet Thursday, March 21st at 8 p.m. Liebman is featured with his own quartet of longtime collaborators, Vic Juris on guitar, Tony Marino on bass, and Marco Marchinko on drums, with special guest Randy Brecker. For information, 610-330-5009 or williamscenter.lafayette.edu. Have you ever wanted to travel to Ireland? Perhaps spend the night in a castle or kiss the Blarney Stone? Well, WDIY is hosting a trip to the Emerald Island this November, and we'd like you to join us. We're holding an informational session Tuesday, March 19th, 6:30 p.m. at McCarthy's Tea Room in Bethlehem. The session will include a presentation by Colette Vacations that will walk you through all aspects of the trip, including flight, transfers, accommodation, meals, and more. For more information or to RSVP, please visit our website, WDIY.org.
See Mrs. Gray, she's proud today because her roses are in bloom. And Mr. Green, he's so serene, he's got a TV in every room. Another Pleasant Valley Sunday here in Status Symbol.
Okay, I grew up in Pleasant Valley. Our family was the first family to move into the first subdivision in Lower Macungie Township. I can't accept any responsibility for that. I was 2 years old. But, you know, the monkeys in this song are kind of dissing the suburbs. You know, from a sustainability perspective, and Jeff, I'm guessing you'll be a little bit more careful in answering this question than Holly might, but from a sustainability perspective, what's wrong with the suburbs?
Well, the first thing that you would think is wrong with the suburbs is that they tend to be relatively not walkable. And so if people have to get where they have to get, it involves getting in a car and going to wherever that is.
Or get out of the way.
And so you have to be in a car to do virtually all your daily activities. And it would seem as though getting in a car on a daily basis for every activity wouldn't be sustainable. You know, Holly would talk about the air quality impacts associated with that, okay. But there's lots of other impacts associated with that. People need to walk. People need to ride bikes.
People need to age in place.
People need to breathe clean air.
I mean, the ability to get where you need to go without getting in a car, I would think as our population ages, is going to be more and more important. I mean, my grandfather gave up his car when he was about 74. It was about probably 4 years too late. And he did it after his second car accident in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so fortunately he lived in a town where he could walk down to the barbershop and to his doctor's office. So the question becomes, you know, as our population ages and they're in suburban settings, which are very lovely, what's going to happen to, you know, their ability to get where they need to go?
Mm-hmm. How do they get around? And that's really the issue, the secondary issue there is that if it's all about cars, then exactly how do you get transit to efficiently provide any kind of service to that spread out environment? And it's really, really difficult. We are partners with Lanta on a variety of things. We're working with them also on the sustainability program, looking at the jobs housing balance. But the real question is, in such a spread out community, how do you efficiently, cost effectively provide transit service for all the needs that people are going to have, especially those people that are to the point where a car is not really an option for them anymore. Their own personal car really isn't an option. So we talked about having a lot of people that are going to be aging, and a lot of people do want to age in place the best that they can. Got some personal experience with that in my family, and it gets to be difficult. How do they get around?
The grain of the suburbs.
And can I get on a bus?
Yeah.
That's very, very difficult. But it's not that you really should expect Lanta or anybody else to be able to provide that service, you know, door to door for every door in the valley when they're so spread out.
The other the other challenge I see with that is many of the subdivisions that have been built in the last 20, 30 years are single use. And so you have one type of housing in the neighborhood. I live in an old neighborhood where within my block we have townhomes, we have single homes, we have a rental unit, we have a group home. And I'll tell you, it makes for a very dynamic little block, but I think that's a great thing. But it also gives people an ability so that if my neighbor, when she wants to sell her house and move into an apartment, she doesn't have to move out of our neighborhood. She's going to be down, you know, in the next block over. And so that mixed type of housing, I think, affords people the availability, the ability to stay in their neighborhood at the very least, if not in their house.
It gives them an opportunity.
And so many of our older subdivisions in our suburbs are kind of that single-use, single-housing type. And I think that creates a community challenge as well.
And you mentioned the comprehensive plan. We started off with that. We promote mixed uses in those urban environments, and that's one of the reasons why. Yep. You provide opportunities for more segments of the population to live in proximity, to have the services they need. The cities are all about providing services. They always have been. In the suburbs, it's more challenging to provide virtually any kind of service. And so that's why the compact development pattern within the urban core surrounding the cities is one of the prime recommendations of the comprehensive plan.
Well,
and where we're going to continue to go, even with the sustainability program, is to continue to follow that basic model.
Yeah. You know, it's a proven development pattern as well. I mean, I was just at a Strong Towns lecture and pointing out that, you know, dense development has been the way the world was developed for, you know, thousands of years. Rome, London.
Look at Europe.
These are dense places.
It's so so cool to fly into Europe where, you know, when it's still daylight. And you fly over this open space. I mean, first of all, I mean, Europe is small, you know, and tons of people. You fly into this open space, and then suddenly there's this, like, densely populated community.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the downtowns are the place where the wealthy are. it's that they're very viable urban communities, and they have almost – and they have these, like, urban growth boundaries.
Sure.
So so why is it so difficult to get there for us? I mean, it's the municipality's planning code more than anything else.
Well, you certainly have to look there for a start. Our comprehensive plan isn't constrained by some of the same rules that the municipalities, and there's 62 of them in the two counties between the cities, the boroughs, and the townships. 62 individual municipalities with the ability and the authority under state law to create their own zoning and to do what they see fit in terms of what the future landscape is going to be. And within that state law also, it says you shall provide for every use. So that regardless of whether you're in the city of Allentown or an urban environment or whether you're in a rural place that very little is touched development-wise, you still have to provide for every single use there is within your zoning.
So in Allentown, there has to be use for agriculture somewhere. Somewhere in Allentown,
somewhere.
You have to be able to farm.
You have to have that opportunity.
Well, you have to have the opportunity, but there's no land left.
That's really the historical issue associated with this, so that the regional comprehensive plan and the municipal zoning ordinances and comprehensive plans are in a way shooting for a different target because they're mandated to by the municipality's planning code to some degree.
What about transfer development rights? Can municipalities kind of give away some of their zoning requirements?
No.
There are. And
if they're in a multi-municipal plan.
Yeah, there's. We have worked on multi-municipal plans. One of the most noteworthy that I'm familiar with is the Nazareth area, 10 communities, some very rural, some very urban, and the idea there is that if you can plan together for a mix of uses, then you can actually zone together and split those uses up, and the rural can stay rural if that's their interest. They can preserve their natural resources and their farmland, and the urban areas where there's already the infrastructure, the sewer and the water, possibly even transit, they can capitalize on those for some more dense development and providing those opportunities in the urban setting.
And from a sustainable communities perspective, you know, if you put a Walmart in a township, the township in which it's located will get all of the revenue from that, the presence of that company. And that revenue would be available for them to make the public infrastructure and the police available and so on to support that new development.
Sure. Yes.
Literally across the street or a little bit down the road, the next municipality over has a lot of the infrastructure burdens just like the host municipality does, and so far as people are driving on those roads to get there and so on and so forth, but they get none of the revenue generated right. by that development. So if you were to put it together in a way that those municipalities would share revenue, then it would be a lot easier to decide where does Walmart go, right? If anywhere, because Walmart, with all due respect to Walmart, it's in a sustainable company. The money goes to the Walton family in mm-hmm. Arkansas, you know, and they're not paying their bills in the Lehigh Valley. But beyond that, that doesn't make any sense that you know, municipalities right next to each other would share, you know, the burden but not the benefit of that new development.
Right, and as Holly said, there are some tools available, transfer of development rights. It was something that we looked at extensively in the Nazareth plan that I referenced earlier. The conversation, though, it's something that people don't necessarily understand, and so it's a very difficult concept to actually put in practice. But it takes an awful lot of work, and people have to be open to it to mm-hmm. begin the process, and it's just very complicated to do.
That gets to I think there needs to be political will, right? So not only do the elected officials need to be pulling in that direction, and the municipal solicitor needs to be doing their work, but, you know, it's a long process to get those agreements in place. And so I think that's where our local residents need to really get plugged in to make sure that things like that get carried forward, because there's such time, they take longer than 3 weeks.
And there's no doubt it's an educational process. Mm-hmm. That type of thing is very different from the way that business has been done historically. And you don't just jump right into that stuff. You have to educate people on the reasons why it's a better idea, and you have to get some buy-in. But it takes a lot of work on the educational side.
Renew Lehigh Valley is a smart growth coalition that's been in place for a number of years that grew out of a lot of work done by the Lehigh Valley Partnership. Our agency and others were involved, and Brookings came in, did a very interesting study on Pennsylvania, gave new push to the concept of so-called smart growth, which I think is really a synonym for sustainable communities. But the smart growth agenda in the Lehigh Valley is essentially urban preservation, farmland preservation, and governance reform, because the 62 municipalities lend themselves to sprawl and poor planning. 17 school districts lend themselves to what I consider to be educational apartheid. We have 41 water and wastewater systems that are wasting a huge amount of money because there's so much redundancy. There's 46 police departments. And, you know, there's a very strong argument that you would have a single sheriff's office running all of the police law enforcement operations out of the county. Does the Planning Commission essentially endorses that approach, does it not? I mean, its plans are in that neighborhood, aren't they?
Which approach? I want to be clear.
The
consolidated approach, the regional approach.
Right.
Sure, absolutely. That's part of the entire planning process. We do realize that there's all of those numbers you've just recited in terms of how there's fragmentation in terms of authority and responsibility and so forth. What you would hear all the time in terms of these kinds of conversations is that people want to be close to the people making decisions. And that's why that.
But they don't even know who they are.
Well, I mean, whether or not they know who it is, they want to feel as though they're close, that it's a neighbor.
They don't
of theirs.
Vote in the off-year elections. No. They don't know who
they want to feel like it's
are.
A neighbor of theirs that they could see in the street and say, "Hey, I really don't like what you did there. I want you to fix that," rather than somebody that's three towns away or what have you that they have no idea who it is and can't talk to, in terms of the government that they have and the services that are provided. And so that's a very strong reason for things staying the way they are, and for it to be difficult to talk about things like consolidation and regionalization in a lot of contexts.
You're listening to listener-supported community public radio. This is WDIY. The show is called Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Over there is Ray Schwab, great guy, doing all the volunteer work and making sure the buttons are pushed at the right time. In the studio with me is Holly Ettinger from Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation, Jeff Reese from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Holly.
I just want to jump in here and say that I think that we have an opportunity in the Valley, and Jeff pointed out how challenging it is to get municipalities to work together on zoning and even planning. And those are real challenges. So there's 62 different municipalities. But I still think that what we need to do in the Valley is focus on what we do want and what we can do and move that needle. And I think we're in a position to be picky about that these days. I mean, I look at the city of Bethlehem. I'm sitting here in Bethlehem, and it's gorgeous. Downtown historic Bethlehem is gorgeous. And that's because 30 years ago, they picked a direction, they made some rules, and they were picky about what they let happen in that downtown. I mean, I remember my parents saying, who's going to want to live there? You can't put up, you know, what mailbox you want. You can't put your garbage cans out. You can't. No one's going to want to live there.
Is that when you became a rebellious teenager?
And you know what those rules did? They made Bethlehem a great, beautiful place to live. And it was City of Bethlehem and the residents there deciding that they wanted to be picky about what happened. And I think the valley as a whole is at that position. I think we got a great place here, and I'll tell you, the nation knows it, and they're moving here, and businesses are coming here, and we can start to be a little picky about our future.
Well, you work for the Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation. Its primary function is the attraction, the retention, and expansion of businesses in the Lehigh Valley. You could make the argument that it's not sustainable to attract outside investment, because that outside investment, if it fled another community for some cheap tax breaks, they'll flee our community. What is LVADC's sustainability agenda besides the fact that Holly Ettinger is running the Envision Lehigh Valley effort?
Our first primary goal with LVADC, I don't think I'm saying anything out of term here, and that is to bring jobs, to create and enhance the amount of jobs we have in the Lehigh Valley.
40 jobs on a billion cubic foot greenfield.
I'm telling you what our goal
is. I'm just asking.
The other thing that you know, we assume a very much the customer is always right attitude at LVDC. And so when a prospect comes to us and says, hey, there's a property in this township and it has the right zoning and we have our permits and we're going to bring 200 jobs, great. Because you know what Jeff started this program with? We're going to keep adding population. And as long as we add population, we're going to have to keep adding jobs. And as a matter of fact, we don't have enough jobs right now. We have 30,000 people unemployed in Lehigh Valley. So it's real hard to not talk about jobs.
With all due respect to my peer, Jeff Reese, in terms of generation, Holly Ettinger is in her 30s, and in my opinion is one of the future hotshots in Lehigh Valley. And I just we're running out of time, Holly, but just to give you the last shot here, what does the Lehigh Valley look like 20 years from now if you had your way?
Well, I have a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old, so I think about that a lot. And I think about whether I'm going to send them to college or not, and whether they're going to be a nurse or a doctor, and whether they're going to live near me in an apartment where I can visit them, or whether they're going to move to Boston or Austin or Colorado.
Portland.
So the Lehigh Valley to me in 20 years has urban locations that have great amenities, that has quality housing in urban locations, because, you know, our urban locations are old housing stock. No one wants a fixer-upper these days. I don't have time for that. So the Lehigh Valley to me has jobs for all education levels, not predominantly manufacturing and retail, right? So that my daughters, if they do want to go to college, can get a job here. I mean, I think that we've all seen that, and we've talked about brain drain for a long time. But if we... How do we change that? How do we make sure the Lehigh Valley keeps our smart people, keeps our young people?
Holly gets the last word. This was Lehigh Valley Discourse on listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Thanks for listening. My guests tonight, Holly Ettinger from Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation, Jeff Reese from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you very much.
And we appreciate your presence. Next month, I'm going to have the candidates for Northampton County Executive in here. It ought to be fun. There's barely enough elbow room. If you hear a lot of roughhousing, it'll be those guys rumbling. We look forward to having you back in another month.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue. What a wonderful world.